What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed the prodigy Ian Wilson, one of America's top male lifters. Ian is a youngster, but he's already been all around the country, trained with the best of the best coaches, as well as athletes. This guy is a very mature human being, very mature lifter. He's got a ton of insight into the mental and physical approach to weightlifting. Last thing before you listen to this, if you would go to iTunes Store or the podcast app and leave me a review, that would be phenomenal. Search Brute Strength Podcast, click reviews, then click write a review. Hope you guys enjoy the show. All right, I'm here with Ian Wilson, the youngest American ever to lift 400 pounds and 200 kilos. What's up, Ian?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. I'm psyched to do this. So I've heard over the years, bits and pieces about your relationship with your dad and how he's impacted your career a little bit. Can you tell us about that relationship and namely, what is it that you admire most about your dad?
Yeah, that's a great question. Weightlifting is something that's been in our family for a long time. My dad started lifting as a kid. He wanted to get stronger, and he's done it his whole life. And then he would work out when I was a little kid, and so I was exposed to it as a little when I was, 3-4 years old even. He tried to get me started when I was maybe 6 or 7, mm-hmm. just with the broomstick and the bar and learn a little technique. He got the videos from the 1999, 2000 Worlds, the 2000 Olympics, and I would watch them. And I thought that, everyone snatched 170 kilos. Mm-hmm. And then he bought a set of weights with the bumper plates. And I remember my neighbor and I, we were trying to move 125-kilo plate and his little kids. And I remember thinking, who would ever want to do this sport? These weights are so heavy. Right. There's nothing fun about this.
Right.
And then when I got to be 12 years old, I just wanted to give lifting a go. I felt like I could be decent at it. And I don't know, once that switch in my head flipped, my dad said, okay, great. And he started coaching me. He brought in Butch Curry to help with some technique. With my dad, I mean, really just seeing how hard he can work in lifting. He's been lifting
personally lifting?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that just showed me what's expected.
Mm-hmm.
He's lifted for, 50 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not something that I look at and say, oh, this is something to do for 5 years maybe. It's something that you can do your whole life.
Right.
And that kind of negates any arguments that, this is going to be bad for you in the long run or anything. And by having that attitude that my dad has passed down, I don't really have to worry about, getting overworked or anything like that. And so really his work ethic, right, and his competitiveness, he doesn't compete so much, but he's a competitive person.
And you could kind of sense that. And
yeah, you can just feel it during training. Bit, right? And, he gets into the competition prep. There's this mm-hmm. mental build up to a competition, and he basically does it with me. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's funny you say that about your dad. Like, when I was that age, I would go with my dad to the gym, but he was like, he did no Olympic lifting,
mm-hmm.
but he bench pressed and squatted. And so that's probably one of the reasons I still have like a decent bench today, because at 8 years old, I was, I was trying to bench press with my dad. So all you fathers out there, get your kids into weightlifting, not so much bench press.
Yeah. And it's something that can always be enjoyable. Mm-hmm. It's a great activity to do with your kids. And
yeah,
I kind of wish that I had learned maybe even more technique when I was younger, just so that by the time I got to being 12 years old and I wanted to lift heavy right. things, that I would have been a little bit more prepared, but
right.
I don't really regret anything.
Mm-hmm. How did your dad, so it sounds like he led by example. Did he, how, like verbally, how did he communicate with you? How did he encourage you in weightlifting? Or was it all just, you know, him leading by example?
I mean, it was leading by example. The idea of working up to something pretty heavy every day is something that he's a believer in. And so I didn't actually know that it was a thing to not do that. Mm-hmm. And so when I started lifting, it was like, okay, we're just going to lift and lift pretty heavy. And we just went from there, and that's haven't really changed since.
Right. So you've been all over the country, lifted with all of the who's who of weightlifting. Have you stuck to that same program, or have you switched to other people's programs? How have you navigated through that?
Yeah, it's pretty close. When I started lifting, I did power snatch pull, power clean, power jerk, clean pull, mm-hmm. clean and jerk, obviously, front squat, back squat. And as I've gotten more experienced, I've thrown out more and more of those exercises just so that my training's more focused. We like to think of it as how many deviations off of the competition lift you're doing. You know, the best you can do in training to improve your competition snatch is going to be, you know, snatch from the floor without straps. Anytime, you know, straps, one block, two block, hang, you know, you just get farther and farther away from it, and the chances of it carrying over to a competition are less and less. So we just try to stay as focused as possible on gotcha. The competition lifts in training. And then also, even though it's not fun to work on the thing you're worst at, force ourselves to work on the things that we're worst at.
Right. And for you, it's a very narrow degree and a very small amount of movements. What do you think, what is your view for beginners on those different exercises? And I know that's a very general question. But
yeah, as a beginner, I think it's good to do power snatches, quite a few of them, especially where you catch it and write it down mm-hmm. and go through the whole motion just so that you learn to meet the bar. I think that that's something that helped me a lot. I've actually gotten pretty good at meeting the bar when I have almost no pull on my cleans, and I'd say that that's largely due to, you know, learning exactly where to catch the bar. You know, learning seven different positions to snatch, I think might make it a little bit harder to learn, but you know, who's to say that that's not going to work for anyone?
Right.
I just personally,
that's not how you would do it. Done it. So, the power snatch and ride it down, I think that's something I want to highlight a little bit. What is the alternative that people are doing wrong?
Well, I see that they maybe don't finish their pull, for example. Mm-hmm. They just kind of pull it to their hip and start jumping under it. And then when the weight gets heavier, then all of a sudden they have to pull it, and they do a full extension real hard and fast because they know that they have to pull a heavier weight harder, and then maybe it'll swing behind them. And
right.
if their flexibility is not good enough, shoulder injuries and mm-hmm. all kinds of things can go wrong. Right. So just getting so that you can snatch, you know, 50 kilos and have the groove look pretty much the same as 150 kilos is what you want to strive for.
That's great advice. So I definitely want to come back to some technical things. But before we get there, I want to talk a little bit more about your path through your career. Who have been your biggest role models other than your dad in your career?
Well, my dad got me started. He had Butch Curry come in because he had seen him from when he was in college and he was an Olympian. So Butch had a big impression. We'd watch international lifting, so I was also exposed to seeing the best international lifters in the world at the time. You know, of course, I love Piros Dimas versus Mark Huster and those kind of classic weightlifting battles. So those are role models. And then in terms of people who've been most influential, there's a guy named Martin Pashov, who was part of the early pre-Cal Strength. He's from Bulgaria, and he basically said, look, if you want to be a weightlifter, that's great, but it's not something that's easy. And he helped me quite a bit just understanding the mental or what you need to do to mentally be in the mindset mm-hmm. to get to the elite level. He was the 2004 Olympic team alternate.
Okay.
And
I'm sure you've internalized a lot of those things now. Can you remember specifically any of those mental things that he talked
about? Yeah, so for example, the 2002 World Championships are playing, and he said, look, if you want to be world class, you need to watch that video and pick a weight, you know, whether it's 240 kilos or whatever. You know, you're probably going to be 105 kilos when you're an adult, which I am now, and pick a weight and just work towards that every single day.
On the bar or on body weight?
On the bar.
On the bar, yeah. Got it.
You know, pick something that's competitive for your weight class or the weight class you're going to be in.
And this is...
And that's your goal.
To you were, what?
15, 14?
Yeah. Okay. So you picked a 240 total when...
Well, he said, like... 240 he, clean. There, for example, there's a video of someone attempting, you know, 235, 240 kilos. And he said... Mentally, make that your goal, mm-hmm. clean and jerk, so that when you have 140 on the bar, you're thinking 240 is good, mm-hmm. and then just work from there.
Got it.
And that was good for me.
I like that. I can relate to that. You know, when I started working out with Tommy Hackenbrook, mm-hmm. that's the experience that I had. You know, no matter what was on the bar, he was next to me with at least 50 more pounds on the bar, so mm-hmm. I knew more was possible.
Yeah, and that also helped me quite a bit. You know, Donnie Schenkel was there, Martin Pashov, Max Ada was there. Sorry if I'm leaving people out, you know, mm-hmm. but there were a lot of very strong lifters there. And, you know, when I was clean and jerking 130, to see people warming up and doing power snatches with that,
right.
just helped me. Not only was it an ego check, but it helped me think, this is really lame what you're doing. You know,
yeah,
you need to be doing 50 kilos more, mm-hmm. 60 kilos more. And when you expect that, and when you're around something or someone that is just doing something at another level, it makes it seem a lot more possible.
Mm-hmm.
Then in terms of the other influential person, Ivan Abajayev, mm-hmm. he came to California. You know, I never trained with him full time, but I go out and work out there a couple times a week. And just the expectations. You know, he coached 16 Olympic champions.
Wow.
And 53 world champions.
Wow.
And, you know, in the U.S., a lot of times people, they like to put the Russians and Iranians and whoever else sort of on a pedestal and, you know, maybe they're fans of them, and I've been a fan of them before, but, you know, when you're around someone who kind of rolls their eyes when they see a 200 kilo clean and jerk, mm-hmm. then you go, oh man, everyone else in the gym is expecting to win a world medal. I got to get with the program, you know,
wow,
step it up.
Yeah.
And just being around that attitude, it's infectious.
Right. He didn't accept good enough. He expects excellence.
Yeah.
And he's seen the
best. Not 10th place, first place.
Right. Wow. I like that. So you are the youngest American ever to clean and jerk 400 pounds and 200 kilos. It seems to me that would be, obviously that feels great to have that, you know, that accomplishment. It seems to me that that would create like a sense of pressure. Do you feel like you have extra pressure to say, make an Olympic team, you know, do well at the Olympics because of those accomplishments?
Not really because of the accomplishments, but I do hold myself to, you know, I try to be my own worst critic, mm-hmm. and, you know, right now I'm pretty annoyed with myself for not being well past 200, but
yeah,
so be it, you know. Right. I'm working hard.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But most of the pressure just comes from what I put on myself.
Mm-hmm. What would making an Olympic team mean to you?
I mean, that's one of the big dreams of any athlete's career, mm-hmm. you know, to compete at the Olympic Games. I don't think that it's realistic for me to go this year. Just not enough time. You know, when I went in and got my shoulder operated on last year, you know, I knew that the chances of going to the Olympics the year after are very, very low.
Right.
So I'm not really too worried about that. But, you know, the next step's probably the 2017 World Championships,
mm-hmm.
to try to you know, maybe squeeze a medal. 2013, a 221 clean and jerk, won a bronze medal. Mm-hmm. And I've jerked 215 in training, and I've cleaned 212, so not too far from those numbers. So that would be, you know, a big, big dream of mine to be a senior world medalist. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Let's talk about your competition preparation, stuff like that. Tell me a little bit about like your competition ritual leading up to and during competition, including if you have like any superstitions.
Including training or?
Yeah, absolutely. Take me through like, you know, like a 5-day window leading up to and during competition, if you would.
Yeah, so let's say the competition's on Sunday. If we work backwards, Saturday, I just try to sleep as much as possible, rest. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll snatch maybe 70 kilos, stretch out basically, mm-hmm. get moving. And then day before that, do maybe 120 and 150. So, you know, 70%. Mm-hmm. Last warm-ups, maybe the day before that, which would be a little under 90%. And then usually I'll do a heavy front squat the day before that. Mm-hmm. But I train pretty heavy up to the competition. I used to taper about 10 days before. And my legs actually got very weak. Right. I'm not someone like, say, David Garcia, who can just squat a house anytime. So I kind of came into this by mistake. I did a heavy Friday workout at the original Cal Strength. Mm-hmm. And then my dad had me enter a meet on Sunday. And I just had one day of rest.
Right.
And it was actually the best meet of my life. I set, I think, 9 PRs or 8 PRs.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was unreal. And then we thought, wait a minute. What happened there? Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of a freak good day. But then we realized, nah, if I'm sharp up close up until the competition, that's a little bit better for me.
Mm-hmm. How many people have you met that are like you, and how many do you think are, you know, need that taper?
You know, one of my neighbors, he's a lifter. He started cutting his taper down, and it helped him quite a bit. I train with David Garcia now. A minimal taper has helped him. Mm-hmm. So,
when you say minimal, you're talking 3 or 4 days?
Yeah, versus a week or 10 days.
Got it.
I mean, that's helped us.
Right.
Cool. So
very cool.
3 data points, but I don't have 3,000 data points. So,
right. Do you have, what's your ritual like morning of, stuff like that?
I just try to stay as calm as possible. Mm-hmm. And especially the night before, try to prevent any adrenaline, you know, when you're going to compete on a big stage, just thinking about it can get the adrenaline flowing. Mm-hmm. So I try to just zone out. Maybe watch TV in my room before.
So that's interesting. So, you know, a lot of athletes will practice visualization exercises mm-hmm. before a big competition. But this is like so dependent on your central nervous system just being perfectly primed. So do you, if you start thinking about it, do you just try to divert it and stop thinking about it?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay. For example, I actually made a mistake in 2011. The night before the Youth Worlds, I went through like a full mental rehearsal of mm-hmm. what was going to happen at the meet. And my heart was pounding mm-hmm. the night before. And then I couldn't sleep until like 3 a.m. or something. And then after that, it kind of backfired on me. So I thought maybe just, you know, maybe in the morning or when I'm doing a little workout the day before, okay, do a mental rehearsal mm-hmm. then. But in the, you know, 12 hours before the competition, just try to relax.
Yeah, that's actually really great advice. I can't tell you how many times I've heard CrossFit Games athletes mm-hmm. saying that they can't go to sleep the night before that Wednesday when they always get in the ocean and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
Which is it's probably because they're just trying to think of the, you know, the last time they were here, how bad that sucked, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I think that is good advice when, you know, when it's time to sleep, you got to sleep.
Yeah.
So you just need to focus elsewhere, you know?
That's cool.
When you have a bad meet or bomb out or something like that, how do you handle it? What's that process look like?
I just try to move forward as fast as possible after, try not to think about it, but that can be tough. In 2014, I bombed at the Junior Worlds. I think I tapered too much, honestly. I was there, and within 36 hours of being there, I snatched 167 and clean jerk 205 in the training hall, and then I just tapered for almost 10 days, mm-hmm. and that was a complete disaster. And that was probably the low light of my lifting career.
Yeah,
I went in there. I should have won, honestly. My total before, from right before the Pan Ams, would have won the meet by 4 kilos. And then the guy who won got busted, and then I would have won by 8 kilos.
Wow.
So I was really, really bummed out after that.
Yeah. What did that feel like?
That's not a pleasant sensation to know that, you know, it's Junior Worlds, but still, it's a world meet. Mm-hmm. And to know that I let that opportunity slip, it still kind of burns me today.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I know that there's nothing I can do about it, so I just try to move forward.
Right. So you had a shoulder injury. When was it exactly?
Yeah, so it happened in September of 2014.
Okay. How did you... Yeah, tell us about the rehab. You rehabbed pretty quickly.
Yeah. I might have rehabbed a little bit too quickly.
Yeah.
But it's okay now. So September is injured. I didn't really know what was wrong with it. People were saying, maybe there's like a capsule that's burst or something. Mm-hmm. I went home, and then I got a cortisone shot, and I could just feel it grinding inside of there. And then after a while, I realized something was really wrong. I went into the doctor, and the guy said, yeah, your rotator cuff's ripped up.
Right.
You're in bad shape. So I just stretched as much as I could.
What did you...
I took a broomstick, mm-hmm. like when you warm up with a snatch,
yep.
and I put my grip real wide, and then around maybe week 8, when you can start putting your arm over your head, I just tried to get, you know, a little bit more flexibility every time.
And how long would you spend doing flexibility, mobility stuff?
Maybe 30 minutes a day.
30 minutes a day, yeah.
Yeah, thereabouts.
That's great.
And I actually didn't find that the physical therapy was as helpful as just stretching.
Imagine that.
Because, you know, you can go in a couple days a week or something for physical therapy, but... even now, a year after the operation, if I don't stretch my shoulders every day, I'm going to have a bad workout.
Mm-hmm.
Say I take a day off thinking, oh, I'll be more recovered. I just feel so stiff in the shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
So really just working on it every single day is what helped it the most.
Right. Did they have you doing any scapular strengthening exercises, or was it just straight mobility?
Pretty much just straight mobility.
Cool.
This is a little embarrassing to admit, but after one of the people who's an intern there said that I should do like a one-arm snatch standing on one of those half ball inflatable balls.
Yeah.
I never went back.
Yeah.
It's
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just to see something cool.
I have no idea what you want.
That's funny. Jeff, I can't remember who it was. I'm going to ask you, what's the most bizarre lift or trick exercise you've ever done or seen someone do? Like, such as that.
Might have been Martin Pashov doing... He balanced a weight on his head,
mm-hmm.
with no hands and jerked it.
No.
I mean, it wasn't that much weight. It was like...
No shit.
And if you rest a bar on your head, that is painful.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny, too.
That's fucking awesome. One of our coaches and one of my friends, Drew Canavero, I forget how much weight it was. It might have been around 100 kilos. He'll put his arms... He'll do like a Frankenstein-style front squat, right?
Yeah.
Where your arms are just out.
Mm-hmm.
And he would squat all the way down, jump up, and catch it in a split jerk. Yeah. It might not have been quite 100 kilos. I don't know, but it was very impressive. Anyway.
That or Hussein Pulaku, this Albanian guy that I trained with, he did, it was like a thruster to squat jerk with,
okay, yeah,
with 170 kilos.
Wow. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Is there a video of this?
There's a video of 150.
150? Okay. Yeah. I'll find that and I'll link that for you guys. Cool.
The guy is hilarious. He comes in the gym and goes, "Look, guys, I'm Lou. I'm Lou from China." And yeah. he just did it with 170 kilos. No one could believe that he did that. Like a thruster to squat jerk.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Okay. Let's talk about some more like technical weightlifting type stuff. So last night I posted on Instagram trying to get some questions for you. We got one guy at Heinzeg 5, H-E-I-N-Z-E-G 5. He asked about 12 questions, so I figured we gotta put at least one of his out there.
All right.
So his question was, is it dumb to try to lose weight and get abs while trying to make lifting progress? And I want to help him with this. You know, there are a lot of sloppy-looking lifters that still do well. There are a lot of shredded lifters that that do poorly, but... You know, I want to hear your take on his question.
No, I don't think it's dumb to want to lean out while getting stronger. And a lot of people told me it wasn't possible. In 2010, I actually got up to about 102, 103 kilo body weight. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the rankings and decided I'd be more competitive as a youth if I was 94. Mm-hmm. And... let's see, my best lifts at the time were 141 and 170, mm-hmm. 171, thereabouts. And I lost, let's see, 10 kilos of body weight, leaned out a lot. I was in great shape. And, I added 11 kilos to my clean and jerk.
Right.
So it's possible to do.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I think the key here is that there's two different kinds of tissue that we're talking about. There's muscle tissue and then there's fat tissue. Fat tissue does zero to help you lift more, yeah. Right? The more muscle tissue that you have in your body, that's just going to help, yeah, you lift more, as you know, as long as you're training your central nervous system simultaneously.
Yeah. And just as like a kind of general rule with my dad, you know, he says, if you're over your weight class and your abs are sticking out, mm-hmm. you know, and you can't make weight, go up. But otherwise, you know, because you want to lift,
right,
the most weight at the lightest body weight, obviously, mm-hmm. in weightlifting. So, I mean, I would say go for it.
Right.
I think it's 100% possible
to
do. If
you can lose body fat,
you're going to be, right, way more competitive.
Right.
I mean, even at the elite level, I'm shocked by how sort of pudgy some guys are. Mm-hmm. You know, if you lose 5-6 kilos and you're down a weight class, mm-hmm. I mean, that could be the difference between 10th and 1st.
Right. That's huge. If you could improve one area of your technique, what would it be and why?
Maybe jerk, although I improved it quite a bit. I jerked 215, which is one I've ever cleaned, so now maybe I should say clean, but that's more just I need to get stronger.
Right.
I guess jerk, you know, after the surgery, it's a little more difficult to get the bar way back behind my head, mm-hmm. and really lock it in that position. When I jerk, that's really the main thing.
Right. Do you have any, tips or tricks for being a tall person? Like you probably have to change some things.
It's difficult. And then one of the other reasons my lifting looks a little bit different. So my scapulas, they really don't, they don't lock in very well. Mm-hmm. I can just effortlessly dislocate them. So then in addition to needing to lean down all the way to the bar, when they start coming out of place a little, mm-hmm. bit, then it makes it more difficult to get the bar in the right place. So
right.
That's why I have a little bit of arm bend, especially on the right side. That definitely.
So your adjustment to that issue is a little arm bend.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish I didn't have to do that, although when my scapula doesn't really locate very well,
right,
it's almost impossible not to. So I guess if I could change one thing about my body, that's what it would be. So I wouldn't have to do that.
You'd be shorter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess. Okay. You have more stable shoulders.
More stable shoulders.
Yeah. Got it, man. What about grip width? Do you change that up at all? Like,
yeah, I mean, I have, but I can't go any wider than collar to collar. Mm-hmm. I've been a collar at that since I was like a 77. Mm-hmm. I was really skinny and tall and weighed 77 kilos. And my dad basically said, hey, go collar to collar. You can do it. Get used to it.
Yeah.
And
nice.
That's what it is.
Yeah. I cannot relate to that problem at all. We got another question from Instagram at JPKIL Holtz with a Z, said that you explained in another podcast that when you figured out how to combine your leg strength with your back whip, your lifts went up substantially. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So it's actually Hussein's uncle who explained in broken English. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to understand it, but, basically as the bar passes your knees, if it's in the right spot and you really extend hard with your legs and you get that back whip going and some shrug, you can get like a faster, you can get some extra acceleration to allow the bar to float a little bit longer on the snatches. Mm-hmm. It works on the cleans too, but it helped me the most on the snatches. And yeah, that's really it. I mean, I think part of the reason you see people who can snatch more off block sometimes is they're doing that. They're synchronizing from that perfect position, mm-hmm. As a way to figure out how to do it. I guess just make sure that the bar is in the right place, mm-hmm. so that you're able to do that.
In the right place, and then the two movements, the leg drive and back hip extension, are not segmented. They are simultaneous, is what you said. Got it. How do you feel about low bar back squat? And let's talk about that for a little bit.
Well, I mean, this kind of goes back to when we were talking about, you know, deviations from the competition lifts. I haven't done back squats all year, mm-hmm. even, let alone low bar back squats. I mean, it doesn't mimic any motion in weightlifting, so right. I don't know why you would do it.
So I'm gonna say why, but I only say it because I know there are so many people out there with this point of view. I don't personally believe any weightlifters should be low bar back squatting. Yeah. But the argument is that, you know, a lot of athletes have weak posterior chains, and then that the low bar back squat targets the posterior chain more, and it's going to help you, you know, it's going to help you pull better, and it's going to eventually transfer more over to, you know, racking a clean. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, David Garcia has been coaching some people, and he's had them switch from doing low bar back squats, and people could not stand up with their cleans before he started, and now they can because they've switched to a front squat. I mean, just look at a clean and look at a front squat, mm-hmm. and you can see the similarity pretty quickly there. If you look at a low bar back squat and then you look at a clean, I mean, in a clean, you're not bent over at a 45-degree angle. The bar's not on your back, so there's just no, I mean, you'll get some benefit, mm-hmm. if someone who's completely untrained does some low bar squats.
Right.
And then I think that that's one of the problems, you know, when you start lifting, you're basically going from your base strength to whatever your potential is. Mm-hmm. And just because you get some benefit doing something, it doesn't mean you couldn't get more benefit by doing it.
Right. That's a great point.
And then a lot of people say, oh, well, that's just the way I, you know, that's just my, you know.
That's the way I've always done it.
Yeah. And so, therefore, I could never be better if I changed or, mm-hmm. you know. You got to look at what's going to be an efficient use of your time.
Right.
That's really what it comes down to.
Right.
And I would put front squats way higher on the list of effective exercises, mm-hmm. before low bar back squats.
Right. It's just, there's just not that much carryover.
Exactly.
And the potential for injury goes significantly up as well.
Yeah. And then the other argument is, oh, well, people lift more weight with a low bar back squat, so therefore they're stronger. But, I mean, you wouldn't say, oh, well, I can do a snatch pull with more weight than I can snatch, so I'm not going to snatch.
Right.
Or something like that. Or, you know, if I have bands on my snatch pulling the weight up, I can snatch with more weight.
Yeah.
Well, like, that, it doesn't make you stronger. It's just cheating the weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very interesting argument. And I want to say, like, I'm not for or against either of the squats, but I think there are, you know, there are times to use a high bar and times to use a low bar.
If you're in a squat contest,
right,
and everyone you're competing against is doing a low bar squat, I mean, you're giving away kilos if you don't do it.
Or if you're talking about, you know, training for overall fitness or especially like sprinting power, sure, definitely experiment with the low bar back squat a little bit. But for weightlifters, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me at all.
Yeah, and really you just want the strongest front rack position so that when you catch a heavy clean, you're able to stand up with it.
Right.
And the front squat is one of the most important exercises for the jerk too, so that your diaphragm is strong enough that you can breathe with the weight on you. I mean, you see people who will squat, you know, huge, huge weights, and then they get a weight on their chest and they can't breathe with it. They start turning purple and there's no chance of jerking it at that point. So low bar back squat, a back squat's not really going to address that, but that's more the importance of doing a front squat and something that's going to carry over.
Right. Got a couple more questions for you before we wrap it up. This is a political one, so excuse me, but do you think that USAW is moving in a better direction now in terms of treating athletes fairly and supporting them versus in the past?
Yeah. It has gotten better.
Yeah.
There's more money in the sport, so that helps. I'd like to see something where they, you know, it's possible to get like an insurance policy, basically, and the insurance company looks at the odds of someone winning a medal at a senior world meet or something and say, hey, if you win a medal at the World Championships or the Olympics, you know, you get to claim a big prize.
Right.
And you can pay into that at a relatively low rate.
Okay.
I'd like to see that, but...
Are there talks about that kind of thing?
There was, like 2 years ago. I don't know if there still is.
Gotcha. Very cool.
But in general, yeah, you know, stipends have gone up some.
Yeah, that's great. And what do you what do you attribute that to?
CrossFit. I mean, there are, 11,000 boxes?
Right.
And how many members? 6 million?
Right.
Something like that. I mean,
it's crazy.
That's a lot of people who are getting USAW certs.
Yeah.
So that's more money for the organization.
What do you see in the next 5 to 10 years for the weightlifting community? Where do you see it going?
I mean, I think it can continue to grow. You know, USA Weightlifting especially. People who are directly involved in the sport, you know. I was talking with Nat Arum about it because he runs Hook Grip, for those of you who don't know him. And he was saying, you know, I think that Hook Grip could get up to maybe close to 1 million people who are, you know, directly following Hook Grip, and then that means weightlifting. And, you know, I think USA Weightlifting has 50,000 members. I don't know exactly. I think it's around there. And so I think that it can grow significantly more. But it's moving in the right direction.
Right. It's great to hear, man. What is your plan after weightlifting? So we talked about, you know, you're studying math and econ. What do you see yourself doing, say, if you weren't weightlifting now or once you're done with this whole thing?
Once I'm done with competitive lifting, I'll probably get some sort of a regular job for a while at least. You know, I don't really know what the future holds, but, you know, I would like to coach some people in the future at some point.
Right.
Especially if I could get, you know, if I could help out younger people who are serious about being good at it and are willing to work.
Very cool, man. Where can people keep up with you and find out more about you?
You can follow me on Instagram. It's iwilson1894. I made a Facebook page. It's just Ian Wilson. If you type in, it should pop up on the pages section. Mm-hmm. I reply to all the messages.
Awesome. How about these new business endeavors? Are you going to post on social media about them? Or
yeah, I got to get them. Kind of I got to get them going first, though.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, thank you so much, brother.
Hey, thank you.
Guys, if you want, you can follow me at Michael Kazyu, CAZAYOUX. And if you have any comments on this podcast, go to our website, brutestrengthtraining.com/podcast. Find that podcast. Leave me some comments. Tell me how I can do things better. Looking forward to hearing from you guys. Hope you enjoy the show.